Welcome to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet.
And this is Martin. We are...
We have two amazing guests.
Yes.
Mitch Ewan. He's calling in from Hawaii.
And we Aloha, have y'all.
Aloha.
And Toby Kincaid from... Where are you from?
Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Hello, hello.
All right.
Hello,
we're
hello.
Talking sustainable technologies today, right?
That's right. We're going to be talking about green hydrogen.
Green hydrogen. So I'm very excited about this topic. I haven't really had too much of a chance to speak with either one of you. So can you just give us kind of a brief overview for the listeners out there that don't know what green hydrogen is, could be? Can you just give us a...
Thank you, Martin. I think that's really important. Some people have no
clue. Yeah, yeah.
I mentioned to several people and they said, what is that?
What is it?
So
right.
So here we go. Define what it is. Mitch and...
Toby.
Well,
seeing as how Toby Kincaid is the publisher of a new magazine called Green Hydrogen Today magazine, I'm going to let Toby tell you what green hydrogen is.
It sounds like he should know.
Wonderful. Yes. Well, green hydrogen is using renewable energy to make clean fuel from water. That's it. And what's important about this is if you have sunlight and water, you can run anything. A house, an apartment building, a strip mall, anything you want to do. The big box stores, the order fulfillment centers, an airport. Anything that you want to run in the modern world, we can do with green hydrogen. And what's kind of important about calling it green hydrogen is because hydrogen today is made from fossil fuels. And it's very dirty. They call it gray hydrogen.
Oh, really?
So you're going to produce, something like 9 times the pollution for every bit of hydrogen that you make. So that's how it's been. That's been largely dominant. There are different colors, kind of what's the color of energy. But green hydrogen is specific. We're going to use renewable energy on the front end, and you make clean fuel from water. And the great thing about that is when you use it, you get the energy out and most of the water back.
Hmm.
But so what in is a nutshell, what is the process, though? What is the process to create this energy?
Right. Well, with renewable energy, you're going to run a device called an electrolyzer. And we used to do this in school. In the 8th grade, we did electrolyzer experiments. And what you're doing is it has 2 inputs and 2 outputs. The input is electricity and water, and it disassociates the water molecule, and produces hydrogen and oxygen. Now, what's great about that is you can store the energy that way as long as you keep them separate, and then you can bring them back together in a fuel cell, which has 2 inputs and 2 outputs. The inputs are the hydrogen and oxygen. You release the electricity and you get most of the water back. So it's this water cycle that would allow anyone anywhere to make the industrial fuel they need to run anything. So there's no carbon, there's no pollution, there's no NOx or nitrogen oxides, there's no sulfur dioxide, there's no greenhouse gases, there's no mercury poisoning, there's no partially consumed hydrocarbons, there's no volatile organic compounds. There's no endocrine disruptors. All of the problems that we face in the world are really come down to the fact that we're burning toxic fuel. And as Mitch and I have talked about it, it's kind of the model of the world is holes in the ground surrounded by men with guns.
Oh, right.
That's a heck of a way to run a planet.
Well, question, why is it taking us so long to start using this hydrogen process? I mean, if it's not polluting our planet... Why is it not ubiquitous? Yes.
Well, it's a good question. 100 years ago, we started using it in Norway, where they were trying to make fertilizer, and they had a lot of hydro. So by electrolyzing water, they've been doing this for 100 years. But I think the answer to your question is that we run in a fossil fuel world.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, 80% of the world ran on fossil fuels. And today, it's 84%. So we're going the wrong direction.
Right.
Wow. And what's so great about what Mitch is doing in Hawaii?
Can you brag about him a little bit? Tell us a little bit about Mitch's background,
sure.
Because people that are just haven't heard Mitch on the show before, can you kind of tell us about Mitch Ewan?
Yes. I met Commander Ewan about 30 years ago, and in Washington D.C. at the National Hydrogen Association Board of Directors meeting. And Mitch comes in and he's putting high power fuel cell stacks into race cars. And I thought, no, that's
wait,
a good
say
guy.
That again. He's putting what into
he's
race
putting
cars?
Fuel cells into race cars.
Okay.
So hydrogen fuel cells into race cars.
And I thought that this is just fantastic. Because remember, there's two kinds of electric vehicles. There's the all battery type that mm-hmm. we're kind of familiar with, but then there's a whole other type called a hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicle. And in that case, you fill up with hydrogen in about 5 minutes. You get about a 400-mile range. And if you make it with renewable energy, you're absolutely green and clean. And everyone in the world could use it as much as they want, and it won't hurt anybody.
So, is it true that Nissan's been working on a hydrogen car?
Yes. You've got Nissan's going back and forth a bit. Toyota does the Mirai. Mm-hmm. That's their car. You have the Nexio by Hyundai. So, but the thing about the Japanese and the Asian makers and the European makers is they're not going to tell America what to buy. They're going to they make a lot of money selling internal combustion engines.
Right.
So they're not going to be what pulls this in, but they are ready to go as soon as the world wants to go this direction.
What's the delay? What is the big delay? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, the big question is this. The fossil fuel industry is about $6 trillion a year.
Mm-hmm.
So they make a dump truck full of money. And it's very difficult. I've never heard any fossil fuel company executives say, we want to get out of the oil business. Now, they'll kind of tell you that they do, but not really. They make a lot of money doing it. And so there's really no incentive. So a couple of years ago, though, the discussion in Europe, they were talking about green hydrogen. And in Asia, they're talking about green hydrogen. And so I thought, I want to read a magazine about green hydrogen. We need one in the world. Well, we've got the pandemic lockdown. I'm going to publish a magazine.
That's so awesome.
Can we give you a toast? Cheers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes.
Here, cheers to your magazine. We're really excited to hear all about it. And we are drinking this special wine that my son got us for Mother's Day.
Amici.
For me, actually.
It's a Sonoma County Sauvignon Blanc. So we're drinking in your honor, sir.
We're drinking to celebrate your magazine.
How wonderful.
Cheers.
But, it's really funny. Harry S. Truman once said, how many times do you have to get hit in the head with a 2x4 before you realize who's hitting you?
Yeah, right, right.
That.
Well, it's so true, but you know, as a consumer, we have very little choice, right? We pretty much have to take what we're given. This is a fairly simple process. Could I produce a hydrogen and fill a hydrogen fuel cell at my house, for instance, because I have solar or I'm getting solar? Also, I live in a high wind zone, so I could easily have a windmill. How easy would it be for me to install? Be able to make my own hydrogen and then get a hydrogen car?
That's a very good question.
Well, yes, it's a great question, and that's really the question. And the answer is, in the next few years, still a little difficult. The focus from the manufacturers have been on kind of large markets. And I'll get it first, but it will decentralize because it's actually very, as you say, very straightforward equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have any strip wells or strip mining. You don't have any fracking. There's no refineries, there's no depots, there's no super tankers that move all of these toxic fuels around.
Right.
You can replace that with actually very straightforward equipment. And countries around the world are kind of taking the cue from Hawaii to go green hydrogen, and I admire them greatly. For example, the country of Chile. Now, Chile, is in South America, it's that west coastal strip country. And they have realized, since they don't have much oil and they've been kind of abused by the fossil fuel industry largely, because they, as you point out, they have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to run a car, you got to put gasoline in it. So they've realized and have created a whole green hydrogen roadmap. as 32 countries now have done. And they're saying, look, in the north of Chile, we have the Anaconda Desert, the best solar energy in the world. In the middle of the country, we're really mountainous, so we have a lot of microhydro. And in the south of the country, they have Patagonia, which is constant wind. And they realized, hey, since the big consumers in Asia would very much like to convert to a what was called the hydrogen economy, mm-hmm. They are very much in a position to supply the new 21st century paradigm, the energy that can supply Korea, Singapore, Japan. And the same is happening in Australia. In fact, where green hydrogen is now in the billionaires club, because one of the biggest exporters of iron ore and liquid natural gas is a firm called the Fortescue Group, and it's run by a Dr. Andrew Forrest. And he has said, he has a $54 billion a year business, mm-hmm. and he has seen the light, and he said, look, the future is green hydrogen. It's not going to be these toxic fuels. And
are you acquainted with going this, to survive, are you acquainted with him?
So no, we haven't met yet, but I intend to. I write about him and his group in the magazine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love for
and
you
it's
to
been
get
amazing
if
yeah.
you could get a hold of him and we will do a show with him. Invite him to the show.
Oh, I think that would be marvelous.
Yes, let's do that.
He's incredible because he's a guy who said, "Look, I've polluted half this world, and I've made a lot of money doing it."
Right.
But he just found the light, and maybe it's his grandchildren. Finally, I don't know what motivated him. But I listened to him. I first was aware of him a couple of years ago in Singapore. They had the first Asia-Pacific Hydrogen Summit. And by the way, America was never mentioned. They
wow.
don't need us. Australia sells a lot of resources to Asia, mm-hmm. and they want to continue to do that. And they don't care what America's going to do. They're going to have these contracts to sell green hydrogen products, either directly or in certain compounds that they can make that ship very well. And they're going to take it all. And I was very impressed with this seminar, this conference, because the ambassador, Kim, from South Korea, he was talking about his children. He was talking about his grandkids actually surviving this world. And I've been in Asia, I've lived in Japan. It's unusual to have an Asian perspective that gets so personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness, we have to publish this magazine and let people know that the rest of the world isn't going to wait for us.
Well, question, where does your
magazine,
how do we get your magazine and where can people find it?
Good question.
Oh, yes. Well, it's called Green Hydrogen Today, and I built it as an app. So that you can, anyone just go to the Apple App Store, or if you're Android, go to Google Play.
I'm going
and just
right now.
Green hydrogen. There aren't a lot of apps that deal with green hydrogen. You'll find me, Green Hydrogen Today, and you can download it with a tap.
Very cool.
So for the people that are listening, is it a free app?
No, I have a slight charge. Mm-hmm. I'm tempted though to just make it free, just to say the you know. Just take it. Then we could use a model where we can fund it other ways.
Well, it sounds like we need to get that
$4 for an issue, something like that.
The billionaire you were just talking about that we need to get on the show. Let's get him to fund it. So it should be a free app.
I would very much like to pursue that because, you know, in the big picture, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about what I call the three E's. You have energy, the environment, and the economy.
You're talking about saving the planet. You're talking about saving the planet, and that's what we're doing here, saving the planet
one show at a time.
Well, it's wonderful, and that's why I'm honored to be with you. And especially
well, we're honored to have you.
Share the space with Mitch.
And we still need you to give a little description about Mitch.
Well, I want to put in a plug for Toby. You know, he started this magazine with his own nickel. He bootstrapped it from nothing to what it is today,
wow.
all on his own and with very little help.
Mm.
He's an amazing writer, and I've had him on my Think Tech Hawaii show several times. The thing I like about Toby the most is that he has a very good way, you've heard it today, of explaining things in simplistic terms so that everybody can understand exactly what he's talking about. And
I would agree.
He has a really interesting slant on things that's that's interesting to read. And he's written a couple of books, and I've bought them, and they're page turners for me. They're short.
What are the books called? What are the books called, Mitch?
I wrote one called The Water Battery. I've written a bunch of different solar energy books on how to power water pumps and water distillation devices. So I kind of came from the solar industry, so I started writing about that. But it's green hydrogen that is the real answer. It's the best-kept industrial secret.
Mm-hmm.
Because it changes the world imagine you have a jug of milk on a table. And the dog jumps up and knocks it over. It's still on the table, but it's going glug, 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 glug. What's the first thing you do? Do you go get a towel and start cleaning up the milk on the floor? No, you right the jug first. So there is a big push for politicians in the United States particularly to kind of slow everything down a bit. But we need to correct that milk jug. We got to stop the spill. So instead of doing some of these kind of fangled approaches of something called CCS, which is carbon capture and storage, they call that blue hydrogen. It's really kind of unethical, because when did we learn? I mean, our kids, we don't teach them to, hey, if you got a problem, go in the backyard and bury it, and you don't have a problem anymore.
Right. Maybe the mafia. That sounds like a mafia teaching their kids.
You know, there's an old joke. There's an old joke where a guy climbs up a tall building and jumps off. And around the 17th floor, we open the window and we call out, hey, how's it going? And the answer comes back, yeah, so far so good. You're going to hit the ground. so far so good. That's kind of the attitude. But there are some really fantastic companies in America that are really in their way pioneering. For example, there's a company in New York called Plug Power, run by Andy Marsh. And what he did 10 years ago is he went to the big Walmarts, the FedExes, the Amazons, and he looked at their big order fulfillment centers. And he said, look, I see you're running battery forklifts everywhere. And batteries are kind of tough in a big environment because, one, in a forklift, what they call material handling vehicles, MHVs, they take a lot of power and they need a lot of energy to run. So before they turned to batteries, before that, they would run them typically with propane. You ever see the old forklifts with the propane bottle on them?
Oh, yes.
Well, propane
is nice because you could switch the bottle out. But you've got CO2, streaming into the warehouse, and that's not practical. So they went to batteries. But the problem was they take a long time to charge, and you need a lot of infrastructure to do the charging, and they didn't last very long, so you had to go back. So any Marsh...
And our battery is really bad for the environment,
we're going to swap out all your forklifts to hydrogen fuel cells, and now you can fuel up in about, 40 seconds, and you can run about 20 hours.
Toby, we have a question for you. Chet here has a question.
Oh, yeah, well, I was making the point that batteries and battery production is really bad for the environment, too. So it saves all those batteries, too.
Would you agree with that? Batteries
Very
are bad
much.
For the...
Absolutely. There is nothing environmental about a lithium-ion battery.
All right. Well, nothing. Plus, we're
child
finding...
child abuse going on in the Congo? Terrible.
Yeah.
And we could show that with a little calculation. You know, if you look at all the lithium mines in a year in the world, everything, it's just something like 84,000 tons for pure lithium. Well, you need about 35 pounds for a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. So when we do the math, that means the world can make about 5 million cars per year. And if you cut the battery pack in half, you could maybe make 10 million. Well, we have a billion cars on Earth right now, not even counting the trucks and the mining equipment, the construction equipment, just cars. So that's 1,000 million. So how many decades, how many centuries would it take to decarbonize just one little bit of the transportation sector, let alone heavy trucks and mining and agricultural equipment, the tractors, the combines, stationary power? So, I may be a little bit harsh here, but I think that Elon Musk has kind of taken people for a bit of a ride. not in that you can't build a
car. That was a horrible pun.
You can't change the world with it. That's not going to happen.
Okay, so Toby, are you saying that we are better off with a gas car, gas-fueled car?
No, than hydrogen is the answer.
Well, I know hydrogen's the answer,
No. Let me put it this way. Let's look at the logic. So in three questions, I think I can get you to the right answer.
Okay.
The first question is, and you hit it on the head, do you stay with internal combustion or do you want to electrify?
Yes, because I just bought an electric Taycan, and I love it. It's a Porsche.
Okay.
It's the best car ever. Are you saying that I made a mistake?
It's a lithium battery.
Did I make a mistake?
No. In fact, you're okay, because when you're talking about a car for a family, you can do anything. But if we're talking about millions of cars, now plugging into the grid becomes a really big problem. And I'll give you an example. When we put in DC fast charge in the old days, this last 10 years, the fast charger was rated about 50 kilowatts. Now, a single house is about 5 kilowatts if you turn everything on. So one dispenser is 10 houses worth of power.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But now they've gone, if you look at Tesla, their superchargers are something like 130 kilowatts. Well, that's like 26 houses. And now they're going for the 350 kilowatt fast charger. That's, 70 houses. Now, does it make sense to use 70 houses of infrastructure for one vehicle? Oh, the math gets
hard. I don't really understand that. I don't understand how...
So that people can charge their cars faster, they're putting in crazy power infrastructure just for one charger.
Mm-hmm.
It's super,
exactly.
It's not sustainable at all.
Exactly.
Right. All right, so we have lots of sunshine in Arizona, but we don't have a lot of water. So what do you propose there? Because there are places that have too much water, and then there's a lot of places like Arizona and California that are experiencing
a
drought.
Well, the great thing about the water cycle is you get most of the water back, and it's totally potable and clean. So we actually recycle a good deal of the water, and just flushing your toilet would use more water than we would use to run you 400 miles. So not actually a problem in terms of how little we use. And it's kind of funny because, when you think of water and humanity, we've been using water for energy for a long time, moving water, to move water wheels and then eventually turbines. And the industry will store energy by pumping water up to a high level. It's called pump hydro. And once they get the pumped hydro up, then when they need it, they'll let it run back down again.
Yes,
so we've been
Arizona,
doing that for a long time.
Our power company has a system like that here in place. It's a massive lake that they do that with.
Right. In fact, 95% of all industrial storage is done in that way.
Interesting.
Well, the other way you can use water is you boil it. So we burn fossil fuels to boil water, make steam. Steam turns a turbine. We get electricity out of that. And then they condense it down back into water so that it can be recycled and reaccept the heat. But in the water cycle of green hydrogen, we're doing a third thing. We're actually saying we're going to take water and disassociate it into hydrogen and oxygen, store the energy. And then when you need it, we reassociate it back to the fuel cell.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of using water like a spring, like a metal spring. So, if you hold a spring and like a shock absorber spring in your hands, and you pretend you're a solar panel, you grab each side and you stretch it, you're charging it up, and then you hook one end and hook the other and gently let go, and you've got it there. Now, whenever you want the spring to give you the energy, you just, gingerly unhook it, and it comes back and releases the energy, but becomes just a spring again.
Mm. Okay, Toby, you explain things very well. Like, you have me, this is very riveting. We also have two... Wait, Toby, we have Dominic and Ken here in the studio. They might be coming over to the mic to ask you a question at some point, but we are so interested in every word. I'm just on the edge of my seat.
I'm shocked that there isn't more information, and I'm very grateful that you're providing it. But, this just seems like a slam dunk. I totally understand what you're saying about these energy companies. They are so powerful, and they will shut down anything that's going to threaten their profits.
Absolutely, and they're very sophisticated. Toby, it sounds like you need to get the multinational.
Toby, it sounds like all the billionaires that are not in the fuel industry need to get together and collaborate and start taking this hydrogen together.
What do you think needs to happen for the United States to jump on this? You know, because Kinga knows a lot of wealthy people, and I mean we have wealthy listeners.
I'd like to help where I can.
Question, what really matters is that if we can make the solution profitable, we win.
Mm-hmm. How can we do that?
That profitability is what's going to convince everybody. And now that gasoline is going really up and up and up and up, that only helps the economics move faster and faster towards fleets of trucks. If you want to see, there's a difference between one vehicle and the fleet. If you're a fleet manager, man, you've got a big problem. For example, at that summit in Singapore, I remember this little anecdotal. It was just an afterthought at the end of the whole webinar. And one of the managers, or one of the diplomats actually in Singapore, said he was looking at, there's 5,000 buses in Singapore. And he would go out to a little bus depot kind of at the outskirts of town where they handled maybe 200 buses. And he asked the manager, hey, what do you think about your 18 new electric buses, the battery electric buses? The guy turns to him and goes, I hate it. And he goes, what do you mean you hate it? He goes, look, I can only charge 18 at a time. I have 200 to manage and turn around every night. And I can, and that, because I can only do 18, because it maxes out the wires coming into our facility. We don't have any more power to do more than that. And he said, it just takes too long. So the hydrogen fuel cell, the things that Mitch is doing, is showing the world that, you know, with clean energy and the right equipment, you're done. You're free. You're not going to hurt anyone. You're not going to hurt any species. You're not going to, you know, how much water we use in running a coal power plant to cool down the condensers.
Toby, can you tell us what Mitch is doing?
Yeah.
Toby, can we finally tell the world what Mitch is doing, please?
Yes. Mitch is a pioneer. You know, when he was putting his work together in Hawaii 20 years ago, he was against the headwinds. And this is what real courage is. You know, Mitch commanded submarines. I mean, the kind of moxie and guts you would need to do that, and let alone have hundreds of men's lives depend on your decisions. Now, that's the kind of guy you want making decisions.
I saw his decision-making when I hurt my toe.
It's an amazing transition, yeah.
I saw his decision-making when I had an injury in Hawaii, and he took command and cared for my toe. Okay, so back to the Mitch background.
Yeah, and I know Hawaii to me is a fascinating case study for energy. Here you have a place bathed in solar energy. You have the trade winds. You're surrounded by water. I mean, this is an energy-rich environment, but 80% of the energy from electricity is burning oil or a fossil fuel. And all of the ground transportation virtually is done with chemical fossil fuels. So if you look at Hawaii and, you know, on Oahu, 85% of the population roughly lives on Oahu, same about 85% of the energy consumption. So this little teeny island, when I looked up what the actual, you know, if you add up everyone's gas bill and everyone's electric bill in Hawaii, it's $5 billion every 12 months.
Mm, wow.
And so can you imagine 5,000 million coming out of those little islands?
And don't they have to transport the oil to Hawaii too?
Yes, a lot of it, I think actually some of the bunker oil was coming from Russian sources, so that was a little issue. But it's always coming from someone. And if you look down on Hawaii in the old days, you know, they had a coal power plant, and Hawaii's pushing hard. They decommissioned it. They're going to add a new capability, and they're taking competitive bids for that. But in the old days, if you look at a satellite, you can actually look like a smokestack. And all the, you know, like a ship, and then all the pollution is heading out into the pristine Pacific Ocean. And that's not to blame Hawaii. That's what we're all doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what is the answer? What is this? Toby, what is the solution for this?
Ah, the solution? Green hydrogen.
And how do we implement it? How do we make it happen
right
now?
I don't mean to be glib. It is green hydrogen because you can put renewable energy sources throughout Hawaii to bubble hydrogen and make it, especially if you have too much clean energy. And that's a big problem in California and in the Northwest. We curtailed something like 16 terawatt hours of clean energy because the grid didn't have any use for it. That's the thing about the grid. The grid is kind of a really amazing device in that it's in real time. If the loads go up, supply has to go up. If the loads go down, supply has to go down, because otherwise you'll over-energize the circuits, and that creates a condition called arc flash. So you'll have streams of electricity jumping out and seeking ground, and that can be very dangerous. So they have no choice but to turn off the renewable energy. Now, the green hydrogen grid, I'm doing an article on it in this issue, is we're going to reimagine the grid. You overbuild it 125% renewable, so you have lots of excess. That means in real time you're running your loads, but whenever you have excess, you run the electrolyzers. And they make the clean hydrogen you can store. And then when you have a peak time and you need energy, you use the fuel cells to put the energy back on the grid. So it's wonderful. It works beautifully with that. So the funny thing is, the answer to Hawaii is exactly the answer for everyone. Green hydrogen.
I love it. So what is Hank Rogers? I know he's been a pioneer also in Hawaii with helping with all the sustainability.
Absolutely.
So what is Hank Rogers doing with this?
Well, he did the Blue Planet Foundation, and they pushed first solar and then batteries, and then they started testing different battery banks. And then they put in Mitch would know the timing better, but they put in a hydrogen fueling station. And that's true green hydrogen, because they're using renewable energy to make the hydrogen. If you do that, you're golden. There's no toxicity anywhere. And that, I think, in actually another article, just to build on that, that we're doing, I'm doing the green hydrogen farm. Now, have you ever been in the Midwest during the winter?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's cold.
Not good.
It's cold. In fact, I had never seen such cold in the United States. And I was like, oh, my God. I was doing a project there some years ago for growing algae with photobioreactors. They take their waste streams and to grow algae. Algae is, you could do a whole show on algae. It's an amazing thing.
Oh, I can tell. You're a regular. You and Mitch are. Mitch, thank you for bringing Toby. He's so great. He's a wealth of information.
It was hilarious because, you know, I'd go to a farmer and I'd say, excuse me, what's your biggest cost as a farmer? And after he gave you a look like you're an idiot, he would say, fuel. And the second would be fertilizer. But fuel is the big thing. Because, in modern farming, even if you're a small farmer in America, you've got to kind of sow you turn the field, you sow the field, you've got to fertilize the field, you water the field, you harvest the field, and then you turn it over again. So you're making about 5 or 6 passes typically on every acre with these big machines. So here with green hydrogen, we can say, okay, forget that. Why not just put wind turbines and solar panels around your farm? And during the winter, when you're not doing any farming, why not build up your own hydrogen supply and with a dispenser? And if we convert your tractors and combines into fuel cells, like Mitch is doing with the buses, then you could provide your own fuel. And when I run the numbers, I'm astounded at how much money you can save a farmer. And I know they'll be into that.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking about the industrial revolution of the 21st century.
Wow.
Amazing.
It really is, because to have a cheap power source that isn't controlled by these gigantic corporations is a big deal. Because, I mean, you know,
Yes.
The equivalent of dollars per barrel versus what it's at the pump, these guys are just making so much money, like you're saying, and
no, it's obscene. It's obscene,
and it's really hurting farmers.
In fact, it's so much money. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I want to build on your point, because it's so much money that I added up what I thought would be all the health care and education costs of the world,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't add up to that much money.
Wow.
So we have the money to actually take care of each other, but we're spending it on fossil fuel companies. And these guys don't want to give that up. They are not going to roll over.
Right.
So you have to beat them in the marketplace. That's the only way we're going to get them to turn. And they're in the perfect position. I mean, it's illogical ultimately because they're in the energy business. But they make it in the ground. They get their fuels from the ground. Somehow we have to convince the world, hey, forget the ground, okay? And don't talk about putting your waste products back in the ground. That's even worse. So you want to not only destroy this world, you want to destroy the future world too?
Right.
No, forget the ground. But if you look in the sky, we actually have everything in the sky that we need. We have the sun, we have the wind, we have the rain, we have the water from the rain, and we have even nitrogen that you can make fertilizer from.
Well, you have water all in Portland. We don't have much rain down here.
Now, what is this you speak of?
I get that point.
But we have a lot of sunshine, and we could be using a lot of solar. Toby, you used to be in the solar business. Don't you think Arizona should be using a lot of solar?
I have thought that since I was a kid.
My goodness, absolutely. You know, it's kind of the best kept industrial secret as well. Is, do you know what 1 square mile of solar energy in Arizona is worth?
No, tell us.
At 10 cents a kilowatt hour, I think it came out to like $70 million a year.
Wow.
So if I go to one of your farmers and I go, well, I think I can harvest $70 million worth of gold from your land. And he goes, no, you're not. I can tell you there's not $70 million a year in gold on this land. And I would answer, not all gold is buried.
Right.
Some of it lands on your head.
Yes, so true. So true.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I know there's been a couple of attempts
here
to try to do some large-scale solar energy with, you know, massive mirrors and that kind of thing, and I don't know where they're at, but it just seems like you're saying, you know, it's a per square foot kind of thing that you can't grow that much to make that kind of money.
Absolutely, and then we're talking $70 million per year,
right?
So the actual reality is the value of energy is really high. But if it's a commodity, you gotta buy it from someone else. And if it's based in fossil fuels, our children will not survive this. They won't. You can debate all you want about how long it'll take to collapse, but like that guy who jumped off the top tall building, you will hit the ground. And it's easy to prove. I mean, imagine your car. You go into a garage, you turn on an internal combustion, don't do this at home, and you close all the doors. You can debate how long you'll survive. I'll survive an hour. I'll survive maybe 10 minutes. But you will expire. It's toxic.
Right.
So we are doing this all over the world. And what the battery guys are doing, I'm sorry to say this, a bit of a disservice, because you can't make steel with batteries. You can't make cement with batteries. You can't make ammonia with batteries. You can't run, we can do drones and small short hop aircraft, but you can't do long haul battery driven airplane. It's not practical. And the reason is physics. There's the energy density of the fuel is everything. And a battery, a lithium-ion battery, is something like 300 watt-hours per kilogram. So that's a third of 1 kilowatt-hour. That costs you about 15 cents for a whole one. So you're talking about a nickel's worth of energy. It becomes completely impractical to use a battery for kind of the heavy loads, the construction equipment, the agricultural equipment, the mining equipment. And, you know, when we talk about I think they call it the four pillars of civilization, steel, cement, ammonia, and plastics. And steel takes so much energy, and they use a lot of carbon in the production of steel when they smelt the melt down the iron ore. And normally for many, many years, they used coke, which is kind of a pyrolyzed coal, so it gets all the impurities out and you have a lot of carbon with hydrogen stuck to it. But the carbon component is the problem. Now that the Norwegians are developing a whole new process called hydrogen reduction, and they are now doing a ton an hour in this green steel production, but the pollution is knocked out like 95%.
Wow.
And
so keep going. What's amazing?
The amazing things about these four pillars is if you just look at the footprint of burning, cement is made from doing what? Burning rocks. They burn the calcium, the limestone down into lime. But when they do that, you need a lot of energy.
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
In China and all around the world, we're building all this cement, and it's just destroying the world, frankly. But if you made it with green hydrogen, hey, no pollution. What do you think?
So maybe. Earlier you said that in about 2 years, there could be a more of a revolution in green hydrogen. So I'm pretty sure you've convinced everybody that if we don't switch to green hydrogen, we're effed. So what do we all need to do? Right. What do we need to be looking for? Obviously, yes. I've already downloaded your app on my phone. What are the solutions? What do we need to be doing? Who do we need to be talking to?
So not only
what do we
solutions,
need to be investing in?
Toby, not only solutions and Mitch, but why is it going to take 2 years? Like, let's make this happen. And I think we can, awareness is number one. Awareness, right. And obviously getting the funding, which I can help, the show can help you with both of those things. Mitch and Toby, take the wheel. Tell us what to do.
So let me get some last words in because I think we're running out of time. But
I'm sorry. Please.
So we have 10 minutes.
Mitch and Toby, we have 10 minutes.
Who financed this? We came up with a nice little brochure on the last page. I've got it right here in front of me. I have this brochure. I've saved it all these years. And what we said was, our world is fragile. Our future energy needs are great. It is time for those of political power and financial strength to make a difference. So what can we do? Mm-hmm. All those people out there who have the political will or the political power and the financial strength, it's time to step up to the plate and make a difference. So here we have Toby on his own nickel, and he's not a wealthy man, put together the Green Hydrogen Today magazine, bootstrapped it up. He needs some help. And some of your listeners who are better off than maybe others can help them out and help make a difference.
I love that answer, Mitch. And we will help you with that. We need to get both of you urgency to Arizona because there are a lot of people here in Arizona that can help.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I registered a couple of .com names I want to develop. One of them is greenhydrogenhighway.com. It's not built yet. But the idea is through all the interstates, we got to coordinate our green hydrogen stations so that people can go anywhere without spending any time, 5 minutes to fuel up. You get a 400-mile range. And I think if we approach Uber and Lyft and say with fleets of vehicles, because that makes the economics work in the front end a lot better, and get people to run hydrogen cars for Uber. And they can say, look, when you take an Uber, you're not hurting anyone.
Right.
You can go as far as you want, and you're not going to hurt a fish.
It seems like an
animal or our children.
Right.
So it's life or death talking about.
Yeah, it is. And I spent 20 years on the civilian side of the military, and I'm currently on several board of directors for the West Valley Defense Alliance, which we deal with a lot of defense contractors. And it seems to me that for the military, especially the Army and the Marine Corps specifically, and possibly even the Navy, you can get 1 million gallons of fuel for a naval ship, right? To be able to, and with the prices the way that they are, you know, if there's a dollar a gallon difference, 1 million gallons is a lot. And so it seems like maybe specifically the Navy to have, a hydrogen powered ship, because that's, you know,
that's really
the availability
smart, yeah.
of fuel. That's a national security thing. So
exactly.
I'd be happy to take, you know, this thought process to our alliance, and I mean, I have no idea what we could do, but I mean, I'm just trying to think out loud. It just seems like the military would be a big, it seems like fuel would be a big issue for them, especially, you know, like when they're operating on in different bases, to be able to make their own fuel from the air, you know, because you can get water from the air. See, I don't know.
That'd be massive.
Right. Yeah. It seems like from a strategic standpoint, that'd be a good idea.
A great idea. Bingo. I mean, the U.S. Navy is the largest single consumer of diesel on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
So as the U.S. Navy goes, the world will go.
Wow.
And so, you know, and I think the military angle is a really important one because right now, what's the most important thing to any military? Fuel.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you have a Navy out there and you have no fuel, you're not going anywhere. So all of the militaries in the world have actually identified to defend ourselves or if we attack someone, where are the oil wells and oil assets that we can grab?
Right.
So if we do what you're suggesting, which is go to a green hydrogen way for the military to go green hydrogen, the green hydrogen navy, so to speak, and other branches, if you do that, then you're lowering the tension. Because every military wants to defend their country. They're just as patriotic as anyone. But they have to figure out how are we going to defend ourselves if we don't secure these fossil fuel assets. If you take that pressure off, I think you'll do more for real world peace than just about any step you could take.
Well, and
so
just
I applaud
the,
your point.
Yeah, and just the billions of dollars that the government would save. So, yeah, that's an interesting point.
We're so dependent on the fossil fuels, so it's really a vulnerability.
Exactly.
Well, it's really true because we all own our fossil fuel cars, and so it's a big step. Okay, we're talking hydrogen, and electric cars, but it's like, why, you know, if there's not a plethora of hydrogen cars, people aren't going to buy them. And there's no awareness
out
there.
You have to have a station. You're exactly right. You got to fill up somewhere. So the infrastructure and the vehicles, I think, go in one package.
And, yeah, it sounds like it needs a sponsor, though. But, you know, it's got to be, you know, Uber. It's got to be the military.
Well, I think your idea.
Like, you know, maybe even just the city bus program in Hawaii would be a good place to start, right, Mitch?
Mitch, did you already start that?
Exactly what he said.
Yeah. Mitch?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Mitch,
I'd like
there?
To make a comment on that. First of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to the Navy because the Office of Naval Research has contributed significant funding to my bus project. And of course, part of their rationale, all the reasons we talked about in the show, is they want to get smart on hydrogen. What does it take? What kind of infrastructure is required? What are the issues? For example, saltwater environment, a salt air environment is very hard on the equipment. We're learning a lot about that at my station. We're only like 50 yards away from a surf break. And out of a scale of whatever to whatever, like a normal place is about a scale of 200, I'm at a scale of 300 for aggressive corrosion.
Oh, yeah.
So part of our project is to develop materials that will withstand a harsh salt air environment. So the Navy has been very supportive. I think it takes a while. I mean, it's like they say, you know, have a super tanker. It takes a long time to turn the ship around, but once it starts turning, then it's going to have all this momentum built up. So I'm greatly encouraged at the way the military is thinking. And in addition, there are some actual operational advantages to fuel cells from the point of view of stealth, because they have a very low noise signature and a very low thermal signature, so it makes them harder to detect. And of course, if you're a soldier sitting in a trench or in your tank, the last thing you want to be doing is setting up a thermal plume and making a lot of noise. So
okay, we have 2 minutes left.
Very good,
Mitch and Toby, we only have 2 minutes left.
Yeah, go ahead.
We only have 2 minutes left. How do we want to end the show?
Well, I think we want to end the show by once again highlighting green hydrogen today. Yeah, Martin demonstrated how easy it was, even during the show, to download the app. And so download the app and help a struggling publisher survive and get the message out, because that's what it is. That's one of the key issues we talked about during the show, was how do we get the word out?
Well, it sounds like monthly.
Today is getting the word out.
Mitch and Toby, it sounds like monthly we need to have you guys on the show and bring more people into the call, and I will really help fund this.
And this is information that could save the world, so it really is important to share it and let your friends know about hydrogen technology.
Yes. So share.
Absolutely.
So we have 1 minute left, Toby. What do you have to say to the world?
That we don't have to trash the place. We can live in peace and energy richness. That's a future we can believe in. Not poverty. Human poverty is completely unnecessary. There's no thermodynamic law that says people have to be impoverished. It's the energy they're tapping into as a commodity, which really keeps them disadvantaged. But with green hydrogen, if you have a little kit, you have a little hardware, you could have a space program if you wanted one. That's how amazing this
Toby, is. Thank you so much. And Mitch Ewan and Toby
Kincaid.
Thank you. I looked at Martin to tell me your last name. Thank you so much. We have really learned so much. And this awareness, you guys are really saving the planet. And we, in the green room, we are going to help you save the planet. Let's do this again. Let's tune in next month.
Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate this.
Saving the planet.
One show at a time.
Bye-bye.